A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel's been thinking about buildings that never close, not as a metaphor, but as a literal operational fact. He's asking whether there are any facilities in the world that have been open 24/7 for decades, continuously. JFK Airport, Logan Airport, are these places actually open around the clock without interruption? Or has the building itself ever been truly closed? And if these places exist, how rare are they? The other part of his question is the one that really interests me. How do the cleaning and operations actually work when a space never empties? You've got a building that's permanently occupied, and somewhere in there a crew has to mop the floor and swap out an air handler. Then the architectural question. When you're designing a space that will literally always have foot traffic, what changes? And has anyone ever bothered to name this category of building?
The naming question is the one that surprised me, because I assumed there'd be a standard term. There isn't. Not a unified one. You get continuous occupancy facility in hospital design literature, 24-hour facility in transit architecture, but nobody stamped a single name on the whole typology. Daniel's essentially asking us to coin one, and I think we should by the end of this.
We'll get there. But first, I want to know what actually qualifies. Because open 24/7 and has never closed for decades are two completely different filters.
Completely different. Most things advertised as 24/7 still close. They close for deep cleaning. They close for renovations. They close when a transformer blows. A diner that's open 24 hours still locks the door once a year to refinish the floors. The continuous ones, the buildings that haven't gone dark since they opened, are vanishingly rare.
So, what's the short list?
Grand Central Terminal, open 1913, and the main concourse has never been fully shut down. There were brief exceptions, September 11th, a few hours during Hurricane Sandy, but those are emergency closures measured in hours, not days. The building has been continuously occupied and operational for 113 years. Bellevue Hospital in New York has been treating patients continuously since 1736. Different buildings on the same campus over time, but the institution has never closed its doors. Caesar's Palace in Las Vegas. The casino floor has been open continuously since 1966. Not the hotel, not the restaurants, but the gaming floor. No locks on those doors.
And airports?
This is where it gets tricky, and I think this is what Daniel was poking at. JFK opened in 1948, Logan in 1923, but an airport isn't a building, it's a campus. Individual terminals have absolutely closed for renovation. LaGuardia's Terminal B was completely rebuilt while the old terminal stayed open next to it. The airside. Past security, where planes are actually landing and taking off, that truly never stops. Planes land at 3 in the morning. The land side, where check-in and baggage claim live, often does close overnight at smaller airports. So the answer to, has JFK ever closed, depends on which part of JFK you're standing in.
So the air side is the genuine article, and the land side is aspirational.
And the construction strategy for these places is fundamentally different. When LaGuardia built the new Terminal B, they did it in phases. Build a section, open it, demolish the next section of the old terminal, repeat. The building was never not operational. That's a construction approach that only exists because the building can't close. You don't phase a shopping mall renovation that way. You just close the mall for 6 months.
Which means the design brief from day one has to assume the building will be renovated while it's full of people. That's not a footnote. That's the entire premise.
And it cascades into everything. Let's start with the cleaning problem because that's the one Daniel flagged and it's fascinating. How do you clean a space that never empties?
I've wondered this every time I've been in an airport at 2 a.m. and watched someone buffing the floor 20 feet from a guy asleep on his luggage.
The answer is zone-based cleaning. You don't clean the whole building at once. You can't. You divide the space into zones, and you clean one zone while people are pushed to the others. Singapore Changi Airport runs 3 shifts with overlapping handoffs, and they use color-coded zones that cycle through 4-hour cleaning windows. Zone A gets cleaned from midnight to 4 a.m., Zone B from 4 to 8, and so on. The cleaning crew doesn't wait for the building to empty. They work around the passengers.
And the passengers just move?
They're guided, subtly. You close off a section of seating, put up those little stanchions, redirect foot traffic. Changi also uses autonomous floor scrubbers that navigate around people. These machines have LiDAR and cameras. They slow down when someone walks in front of them. They route around sleeping passengers. It's not a nightly deep clean. It's continuous surface maintenance. Clean as you go, rather than clean after close.
So the floor is never fully clean, but it's also never fully dirty. It's in a permanent state of acceptable.
That's the equilibrium. And it works because the cleaning protocols are designed for that equilibrium. You're not aiming for pristine, you're aiming for a floor that never gets bad enough that someone notices. Different cleaning chemicals, too. Faster drying, lower odor. You can't fumigate a space that's occupied.
What about the building systems? HVAC, electrical, elevators. Those can't be cleaned around. They have to be maintained, and maintenance usually means shutting things down.
N+1 redundancy. That's the engineering principle. For every critical system, you install one more unit than you need. If the building requires 3 chillers to stay cool, you install 4. One fails, you route around it, nobody notices. Electrical systems in these buildings are typically dual feed. They pull power from 2 separate substations. If one goes down, the switchover is automatic. Elevators are serviced in pairs. You take one offline. Its partner handles the load.
So, the building is designed to be partially broken at all times, and nobody's supposed to know.
That's the whole idea. No single point of failure applied to architecture. It's the same principle that keeps data centers running, but applied to a space full of humans. And it's expensive. N+1 typically adds 20-30% to the mechanical budget. You're buying equipment that you hope you never need.
Which is why most buildings don't do it. A office tower can just tell everyone to go home if the HVAC dies. An airport can't.
And that gets us to the architectural implications. When you know the building will never be empty, every material choice changes. Carpet is out. You can't deep clean carpet in an occupied space. These buildings use terrazzo flooring, polished concrete, stone. Surfaces that can be cleaned with a machine while people walk on them. Handrails are stainless steel, not wood. Antimicrobial, easy to wipe down continuously. High-touch surfaces get copper or copper alloy, which is naturally antimicrobial.
Lighting.
Tunable white lighting. This is one of the more interesting developments of the last decade. In a 24-hour building, you've got staff working night shifts. If the lighting is the same harsh fluorescent at 3 a.m. as it's at noon, you're wrecking their circadian rhythms. Tunable white systems shift color temperature across the day. Cooler, bluer light during daytime hours, warmer, amber light at night. It's not just for the passengers, it's for the people who work there. Studies show it reduces fatigue and errors on night shifts.
And acoustics?
This is the one most people don't think about. A building that never sleeps has to absorb sound from 24-hour activity without feeling dead. If you overdampen, it's like a recording studio, unnerving. If you underdampen, it's a cacophony. The University of Copenhagen has a 24-hour library that uses what they call soundscape zoning. Silent zones have heavy acoustic baffles. You could hear a page turn. Transition zones use sound-absorbing panels to create a buffer. Active zones, near the coffee machines, the entrances, are designed to let noise happen. The building doesn't try to be one acoustic environment. It's 3 or 4, layered.
So you're designing a building that contains multiple buildings, acoustically.
And operationally. Which brings me back to Daniel's question about whether there's a name for this. I spent an afternoon looking, and the closest you get is continuous occupancy facility in healthcare architecture. But that's a functional description, not a typology. It's like calling a skyscraper a tall building. It's accurate and completely unhelpful.
So what do we call it?
I propose perpetual architecture. Buildings designed for the condition of never being empty. It's not an official term. Nobody's publishing papers on perpetual architecture. But it captures the thing that makes these buildings different. The design assumption isn't. This building will be used a lot. It's this building will never not be used.
I like it. It names the absence of the reset. Every other building gets to exhale. The office at 6 p.m., the school in July, the mall on Christmas. These don't. The exhale never comes.
And that changes the design process from the very beginning. Construction phasing becomes a primary design constraint, not an afterthought. You're not just designing a building. You're designing a sequence of partial buildings that have to function while the next partial building is being built. Renovation happens in what the industry calls night windows, typically 2 a.m. to 5 a.m., when foot traffic is lowest. A crew comes in, does whatever can be done in 3 hours, and leaves before the morning rush. You're not renovating, you're conducting a series of surgical strikes.
The building is never whole and never broken. It's perpetually under construction and perpetually operational.
And the systems are designed for hot swapping. You replace a chiller without shutting down the HVAC. You upgrade an electrical panel while the building is still drawing power. That's not standard construction. That's a specialized discipline. There are contractors who only do occupied renovation, and they charge a premium because the logistics are so much harder. You can't just cordon off a wing and go home at 5. You're working around the building schedule, and the building schedule is always.
So perpetual architecture isn't just a design philosophy. It's a whole supply chain. Specialized cleaners, specialized contractors, specialized equipment.
And specialized staff. The people who work in these buildings develop their own rhythms. Airport janitorial staff, hospital orderlies, casino floor managers, they're working in a space where the concept of closing time doesn't exist. Their shifts overlap. Their handoffs are designed for continuity. You don't hand over a clean, empty building to the next shift. You hand over a building that's exactly as busy as when you arrived.
Which makes me think about the psychological dimension. Working in a place that never closes, does that do something to you?
There's actually some research on this from hospital nursing studies. The absence of a closing ritual, the thing where you tidy up, turn off the lights, lock the door, removes a psychological boundary. The shift doesn't end with closure. It ends with a handoff. Some people find that draining. Others find it liberating. There's no pressure to finish because the work is definitionally unfinished.
The building doesn't care that your shift is over.
And that's where the design has to compensate. Break rooms in perpetual architecture are more important than in regular buildings. They're designed as genuine retreats. Different lighting, different acoustics, often no sight lines to the operational space. You need to give staff a place that does close, even if it's just a room with a door.
So the building contains its own opposite. Little pockets of closure inside the perpetual openness.
Which is a nice way to put it. And that's the thing Daniel's wife would probably recognize immediately as an architect. When you're designing for permanent occupation, the negative spaces, the places where people aren't, become just as important as the places where they are. You're not just designing flow, you're designing refuge.
Alright, so we've got the short list of continuous buildings, we've got the zone-based cleaning, the N+1 redundancy, the tunable lighting, the soundscape zoning, and we've proposed a name. What are we missing?
The misconception Daniel was circling. He asked whether these places are rare, and the answer is, it depends on how you define the category. Grand Central, Caesar's Palace, Bellevue, those are rare. But if you widen the lens, 24-hour spaces are everywhere. Every 24-hour diner, every all-night gas station, every Walmart that never closes.
The first 24-hour Walmart opened in 1992.
And those are perpetual architecture, too. They just don't look like it. Fluorescent lights, linoleum floors, a guy named Earl who's been working the overnight shift for 14 years. The design language is different. It's not about creating a pleasant perpetual space. It's about creating a cheap one, but the operational constraints are the same. You clean around the customers. You maintain the systems while the store is open. You never close.
Which means the most common form of perpetual architecture might be the least glamorous one.
That's the thing I keep coming back to. We get fascinated by airports and casinos because they're spectacular, but the real work of 24/7 design is happening in 1,000 big box stores and truck stops. Those spaces have their own typology, even if nobody's writing papers about it. Bright lighting so nobody falls asleep, hard floors that can take a scrubber, minimal decor because decor collects dust, and dust means more cleaning.
The architecture of never closing, stripped to its essentials.
Arguably more successful than the fancy versions. A Walmart that's been open continuously since 1992 has hosted more human hours than some airports. It's just that nobody thinks of it as architecture.
Because it's ugly.
Yes. But ugly doesn't mean undesigned. Someone made decisions about that space. The floor material, the lighting color temperature, the aisle width, knowing it'd be occupied at 3 in the morning. That's perpetual architecture. It's just perpetual architecture that nobody wanted to look at.
Which brings us to Hilbert, who I suspect has opinions about this exact thing.
He's been quiet back there.
3 months in 1998, I worked the night shift at the 24-hour Walmart outside Tulsa, 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. They called it the ghost shift.
The ghost shift.
400 shopping carts. The store manager told me they bought 400 because they knew 50 would be in the parking lot at any given time, 20 would be broken, and the rest had to be available. That was their N+1. Shopping carts.
That's actually a perfect example of the redundancy principle.
The cleaning protocol was you mopped one aisle while people shopped the next. You didn't close the aisle, you just worked around them. If someone wanted the soup you were standing in front of, you moved. The floor was never clean and never dirty. It was just managed.
What was the hardest part?
The lighting. Same fluorescent at 4 a.m. as at 2 p.m. By the end of the shift, your eyes felt like sandpaper. They didn't put in the tunable stuff until 20 years later, and even then it was just the break room.
The building didn't care about your circadian rhythms.
The building didn't care about anything. That was the point. It was designed to be indifferent. You could set it on fire, and it'd probably still sell motor oil.
Did it ever close?
Once. 1999. A tornado took out the substation, and they ran on generators for 6 hours, but the generators couldn't handle the refrigeration. They closed for 4 hours. The manager acted like it was a personal failure.
4 hours in 7 years.
He kept the receipt from the generator fuel, framed it in his office. The night we almost made it.
That's the psychology of perpetual architecture in one framed receipt.
The thing you're missing, though, is that most 24-hour buildings aren't airports. They're that Walmart. They're the gas station on the interstate. They're the diner where the coffee pot never gets turned off. You're talking about Grand Central, like it's the prototype, but the prototype is a concrete box with a flickering sign and a guy named Earl.
The category is bigger than we've been treating it.
The category is most of the built world after about 11 p.m. You just don't see it because you're asleep.
The design language of those spaces, the fluorescent lights, the hard floors, the minimal decor, that's not accidental. That's perpetual architecture on a budget.
It's perpetual architecture where the only design goal is don't let the building get in the way of the transaction. The building is a container for commerce. That's it.
Which is a design philosophy, even if it's not a pretty one. And it works. Those buildings stay open for decades without anyone writing case studies about them.
The Walmart I worked at is still open. Still 24 hours. Same linoleum.
Earl's still there?
Earl retired in 2009. They gave him a plaque. 14 years of ghost shifts. He hung it next to the time clock.
The building has its own lore, its own internal history.
Every 24-hour building does. You just have to work there to know it.
I think what Hilbert's pointing at is that we've been treating perpetual architecture as an exotic category, and it's not. It's the most common category of building that operates at night. We just don't think of it as architecture, because nobody designed it to be looked at.
Which means the real question Daniel was asking, is there a name for this, has two answers. There's the high design version, which we're calling perpetual architecture, and there's the vernacular version, which is just the night shift. The buildings that stay open because someone has to sell motor oil at 3 a.m.
The vernacular version might be the more important one. It's where most of the actual 24/7 human experience happens.
The cutting room floor detail I couldn't fit in earlier. The reason Changi Airport's cleaning protocol is so sophisticated isn't because they wanted to be fancy. It's because they ran the numbers and realized that closing for deep cleaning would cost them about $2 million per hour in lost retail revenue. The perfume shops and the whiskey stores are inside the secure zone. If you close the terminal, you close the shops. The cleaning protocol is driven by duty-free economics.
The perpetual architecture is being shaped by perfume sales.
The world's best airport cleaning system exists because someone did the math on Chanel No. 5.
That's beautiful, in a deeply cynical way.
It's the kind of thing that makes you wonder what else is being shaped by a spreadsheet somewhere.
Which is where I want to land. The open question. As more of the economy moves toward 24/7 operation, e-commerce logistics, remote work across time zones, AI-powered automation that doesn't sleep. Is perpetual architecture going to stop being a specialty and just become normal? Are we heading toward a world where the design assumption isn't this building closes at night, but this building might never close?
I think we're already there for certain building types. Data centers have been perpetual architecture for decades. Fulfillment centers are getting there. The question is whether the design principles, the N+1 redundancy, the zone-based maintenance, the circadian lighting, trickle down to buildings where they're not strictly necessary but would make life better.
A school that never closes, not because it has to, but because the community uses it around the clock. A library that's always open. A public building designed for permanent occupation.
That's the optimistic version. The pessimistic version is more Walmarts, more buildings designed to be indifferent.
Probably both. The future is Changi Airport and a gas station on the interstate, and they're both perpetual architecture. One just has better lighting.
Daniel's question about whether there's a name for this, I think the answer is that there will be. Sooner or later, someone's going to need a single term for building designed to never be empty, because there are going to be enough of them that the category demands a name. We're proposing perpetual architecture. Maybe it sticks.
If it doesn't, the buildings will still be there. Open at 3 a.m., floor never fully clean, someone named Earl on the ghost shift. This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer Hilbert Frumingtop for the ghost shift stories and the framed receipt.
If you've worked in a building that never closes, we want to hear about it. Email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. Tell us about the lighting, the floors, the guy who's been there for 14 years.
We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.